You're back with Annie on Solidarity Breakfast. Strengthening mechanism, a critical start, but not the final word. This is from the Australian Conservation Foundation. And I caught up with Gavin McFadden, Australian Conservation Foundation Climate Change and Clean Project Manager, for why they believe this to be so.
Can you tell my listeners what the Greens leader Adam Band actually agreed with Climate Change Minister Chris Bowen about when they were dealing with strengthening a mechanism to stop increasing our emissions?
Yes, well, I mean, we congratulate all the parties that engaged with improving the safeguard mechanism. The original design introduced by Minister Bowen was deficient. It fell far short of what we needed to see. And of course, I mean, the first point to make is the coalition didn't even engage with trying to strengthen or even be involved in negotiating stronger climate policy at a federal level. So it was left to the Greens and the crossbench to work with Labor to try to get this done. And over the past few months, the safeguard mechanism proposed by Labor, this was originally a policy of the Abbott government, was introduced in 2016. Labor made an election commitment to improve it, and then the Parliament worked over the last couple of months to strengthen it so that it could pass through the Senate and become law yesterday. Some of the key improvements are that the cap that facilities or businesses, about 215 of them across the nation, the biggest polluting facilities in the country, they now have to meet an absolute emissions cap, which they can't do just by offsets. They have to reduce their emissions on site. And that's a strong and welcome improvement on the original design, which was going to be a net cap, which meant that facilities could just meet their emissions reduction targets to stay under the baseline through offsets like tree planting. Now they have to do an absolute emissions cap. We saw a stronger scrutiny and attention to methane emissions, and we know that methane is a much stronger greenhouse gas than CO2. We've had a lot of trouble properly monitoring and verifying the methane emissions from gas and coal projects, and now there'll be stronger scrutiny on methane. There'll be a stronger role for the Climate Change Authority in its reporting, greater scrutiny of how the safeguard is progressing towards Australia meeting its emissions reduction targets, 43% by 2030 and net zero by 2050. So a stronger and more transparent role by the Independent Climate Change Authority. And probably the other big outcome was that we saw a significant reduction in the ability for governments to subsidise or give taxpayer funds to the coal and gas industry in Australia. So the National Reconstruction Fund, the Powering the Regions Fund, and some other legislation was changed to make sure that now public money was no longer available to the fossil fuel sector. They still have access to the diesel fuel rebate, but some significant avenues that in particular the previous government was using fund fossil fuel projects with public money have now been blocked under this legislation, which is excellent.
Yeah, which means that they'll have to use private funding if they're going to... that's an option, obviously.
That's obviously an option. And so, as I said, there's still the diesel fuel rebate, which is a significant subsidy to the mining sector in Australia, about $8 billion last year. But slowly but surely, this government is getting public funding for the fossil fuel sector under control, and it's flipping that funding to the renewable sector. So the Powering the Regions Fund, for example, in this package has allocated another $400 million to decarbonisation efforts and increasing renewables in the system to help some of those high emitting sectors that aren't coal and gas, so like cement or aluminium refining, alumina refining and so forth, getting the emissions from those sectors down.
Now, it's interesting, these terminology, there's lots of terminology involved in all this. Pollution trigger and carbon budget Explain that to my listeners.
Well, now there's a carbon budget. So what the safeguard will do is reduce emissions from the 215 most polluting facilities in the nation by 4.9% on average between now and 2030. If companies can't get their facilities below that cap, they will need to purchase safeguard mechanism credits, so like carbon credits, to stay beneath that baseline so you can engage in the carbon market. So if you're below your baseline, you'll be able to sell carbon credits into the market to a facility that can't get its emissions below its baseline. So it's basically a carbon trading scheme. And if that fails, you can access offsets, such as from tree planting, waste management, avoided deforestation and so forth. So that's how you'll stay below a cap in order for Australia to meet a 43% by 2030 target. The budget just refers to the emissions, the emissions budget, the CO2 and methane budget that we have and how we need to reduce that over time between now and 2030 and then net zero by 2050. There is a lot of jargon, sorry about that, but the climate debate tends to have a fair bit of that. So it is a bit of work to explain it to the public in a way that people can understand.
But it really, what it is resembling or dressing in capitalist terms. That's what they're doing. That's what's happening here. It's dressing up as a capitalist industry performance model, isn't it?
Well, what it's doing is it's the key policy for Australia to meet its emissions reduction target by 2030, especially that 43% target. I mean, we'd like to see that increase, obviously, in line with a 1.5 degree pathway. That's what the science says we need for a safe climate. And that means our 2030 target would need to be a lot higher than 43%. It would need to be double that, in fact. And we look forward to working with the federal government and the parliament to look at Australia introducing a far more ambitious 2035 emissions reduction target later on next year. And then that means that more strict and more, you know, like I guess more ambitious baselines will be placed on these companies beyond 2030 to get Australia's emissions down as quickly as possible so we've got the best chance of maintaining a safe climate in this country.
So do you think that it's actually possible under this sort of arrangement for there to reduce Australia's reliance on gas and coal?
Well, yes, it will do that. I mean, Australia's now got a commitment to be 82% renewable energy by 2030. And this government, this Labor government, is full steam ahead in trying to achieve that. And the safeguard, while it reduces mostly emissions from industry, it will have a significant impact on the coal and gas sector. About 57% of the emissions covered by the safeguard are from coal and gas. What we need to see, though, from this federal government and where it continues to fall short is in dealing with Australia's exported emissions. So this policy relates to Australia's domestic emissions, what we call Scope 1 emissions on site, but it doesn't deal with what we call Scope 3 emissions, which are emissions caused by Australia's coal and gas exports when that coal and gas is burnt overseas. Australia's the third biggest energy exporter on the planet, and this policy does nothing to curb Australia's coal and gas exports. So what we need to really pressure the Australian government to do now is realise Australia's opportunity to remain an energy export superpower, but for that to be in clean energy and clean manufactured products, as it needs to phase out of coal and gas, not just for our domestic energy needs, but for our exports as well.
Because most people are pretty concerned, actually, about the concept of new or expanding projects. So, for example, the Artesian Basin being sacrificed for a gas project. It just doesn't seem to add up to people in general.
Well, one of the things we hope now the safeguard mechanism will do because there is now a hard cap, there's a cap on absolute emissions, on gross emissions, is that many of the, perhaps as many as half of the 116 coal and gas projects currently on the books at various stages in their approvals processes will not go ahead because they simply won't be able to be accommodated under the cap or under Australia's carbon budget. So we'll see when the rubber hits the road with this policy, the impact it will have on projects. But now, as projects go through their approvals processes, they will trigger an approval under our environment laws, which we call the EPBC Act, the Environment Biodiversity Protection Conservation Act, and the emissions impact of new projects will need to be assessed against those laws to see if they can go ahead while retaining Australia's trajectory to meet its 43% by 2030 target. It's pretty clear that there is no way all of those projects can go ahead and for Australia to stay under that carbon budget, under that cap. So we'll wait and see how many coal and gas projects cannot proceed as a result of this policy.
All right. So the next thing is you're pretty confident, or the ACF are quite confident about the potential for clean energy production within Australia. Do you want to give my listeners some idea of what you're talking about?
Well, Australia is lucky enough to be probably the best country in the world for coal, best country in the world when it comes to renewable energy, both wind and solar power, and also emerging technologies around pumped hydro, tidal and wave power as well. But when it comes to wind and solar, there's no country on earth better endowed than Australia. We've got excellent wind and solar resources and plenty of land to put these new projects on. I mean, these new projects also need to be done in an environmentally sustainable way. Even big renewable energy projects have an environmental impact, and we need to make sure that local communities, First Nations communities, and also natural and cultural values are protected when we build these large projects. But Australia is very well endowed not just to meet our domestic energy needs by renewables, but to export renewable energy to energy-hungry Asian markets, which may need to import renewable energy in order to meet their own emissions reduction targets and energy needs. So we're urging the federal government to bring into place an export strategy for renewable energy so Australia can harness this potential and not only decarbonise our economy, but help energy-hungry Asian markets in our region to also decarbonise using Australian renewable energy, green hydrogen and other green manufactured products like green steel, green aluminium and so forth.
So you have quite a lot of confidence in the battery technology that would allow some of this energy to actually be transferred, is it?
Well, at a household level, batteries are now up and running, as people know. Some listeners may even already have them in their homes. Some big battery projects which are getting bigger and more efficient. Technology is moving really rapidly in this space. So energy storage via battery technology, but also pumped hydro technology, is continually evolving. The price is coming down. Their ability to store large amounts of energy for a long period is improving. And so, you know, technology in some respects is our friend when it comes to the clean energy transition, and energy storage is a key plank in being able to do that, not just for households, but for industry as well.
But to export energy, you're talking about green hydrogen and other types of product, right?
Potential for green hydrogen and ammonia, but we're also talking about direct renewable energy export. So actually running seabed cables, deploying renewable energy from Australia into nearby Southeast Asian markets. And we're also talking about renewable products like green steel, green aluminium, and so forth.
And the other thing I wanted to know is that you have great confidence, your organisation has great confidence in the economic system that we have, you know, large corporate sort of entities who will deal with this sort of stuff, as opposed to decentralisation that is potentially a component of sustainable energy. You think the model
Well,
works?
one of the well, there needs to be significant improvements to the economic models that are enabling, I guess, this transition. We've still got an economic system that heavily prioritises coal and gas over renewable energy, and that needs to, although that's changing, and needs to continue to change. But with the clean energy revolution, we're already seeing a significant decentralisation in our energy system. We're going from very large, mostly coal-fired power stations to a much more decentralised model where even households are producing their own energy through their solar power and, in many cases, deploying excess energy from their houses back into the grid. We're seeing significant government and private sector investment in community energy hubs for renters, for low-income households, and for regional communities running off their own renewable energy. So what's happening with this clean energy revolution is a significant decentralisation of our energy system. And that's why we need to see such large investment in transmission. So we're seeing a significant investment in new transmission infrastructure because of this significant decentralisation that's occurring in the energy system, away from big companies and big projects towards a much more decentralised model. And that's happening already as we speak.
That's, what do you reckon the time frame is going to be for this? I mean, because it's a battle, isn't it? I mean, when you look at things like the enormous amounts of profits that are coming to places, people like Shell and other, coming out of the Ukrainian war and that sort of stuff, where they no longer, and BP, all of them, where they no longer feel that they need to get public funding in any way because they're rolling in funds. Is it a race against time, against this sort of mentality and sustainable environmental care?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we lost over 10 years under previous coalition governments, under Tony Abbott, Scott Morrison, and Malcolm Turnbull. We had over a decade of absent climate policy and energy policy in Australia. And so we're rapidly trying to make up for that lost decade, for that lost time. We're still way behind the eight ball in Australia when it comes to the clean energy transition we need. We're also way behind the eight ball when it comes to things like energy efficiency and the way we build our houses, commercial buildings and towns. We're way behind the eight ball when it comes to the need to reduce transport emissions. We're nowhere near where we should be in terms of the uptake of electric vehicles, having more electric vehicles on the market and enabling charging for electric vehicles. The safeguard mechanism is a major step forward when it comes to reducing industrial emissions, but we've got a lot of work catching up to do when it comes to reforming our energy system, our transport system, the way we build our cities and towns, to electrify the Australian economy so that we can use renewable energy to do that, instead of coal and gas. And then, as I said, that doesn't even touch on our exports, and we rapidly need to transition Australia from dirty to clean exports. And as we know, the climate crisis is well upon us. People are seeing the impacts of more extreme and unpredictable weather. Australia is one of the most affected countries in the world by climate change. And so we haven't got a moment to lose in facilitating that clean energy transition, from which then we can electrify the rest of the Australian economy and decarbonise our exports as well. In order to maintain a safe climate, which is global average temperatures staying below 1.5 degrees, we've got a lot of work to do just the next few years. This really is the critical decade in order to ensure that we have a safe climate moving forward.
And that was Gavin McFadzen, Australian Conservation Foundation Climate Change and Clean Project Manager. And we were having a chat about following the Greens and Labor's agreement on strong changes to the safeguard mechanisms, polluter laws. You're on Solidarity Breakfast with Annie.